Thank you. still has lots of work done. So we just went ahead and took for everybody for the 19. Members will be transported to cases for transport for the Sunday. We meet on Monday. Monday night we come back to Johannesburg. Come back to Cape Town. But unfortunately, we do not have the speakers. So I'm assuming that it's okay that we book for the entire committee for the Monday. Thank you. And the itinerary will be sent out for your flight details and so on. The third item before we get to the agenda. Members will recall that we were going to meet on the 28th to deal with the department's quarterly report. Then we moved it to the 21st. And I've just indicated now that on the 21st, we received a notice from the House Chair that all committees should not sit on the 21st so that we can allow the Minister and the Presidency to brief members of Parliament on the outcomes of Census 2011. So our meeting of the 21st falls away. And you also record on the 21st over and above the annual report we will be talking two matters that members asked for specifically. One was the memorandum of agreement or memorandum of understanding around the fencing project, and the second one was going to be the process around the nutrition, which comes to the end of the 31st of January. In discussions with the minister, we managed to reach an agreement that in terms of the nutrition that will happen when we are on recess, that we take an in-principle decision here that the contract on the nutrition on the 31st must be extended for a limited time, but it must not concurrently with a process of advertising so that there is a transparent, fair, and in line with the secrets of supply chain management in terms of the renewal of that contract, if there is to be the renewal of that contract. And we thought that we should have at least a one-liner in our minutes so that it's not as if these things happen once we are on recess. So that's the one. Ministers also agreed that on Monday it's prepared to have a small discussion about if we want to see face to face. But the undertaking is that there is a process that runs concurrently with a short-term month-to-month, if you want to call it, feeding nutrition project. What we need to decide between there and Monday is what is that short-term that we're talking about. If we say that they must do this process on the 31st onwards to give them 6 months, to give them 3 months, that type of thing, I think that's the decision we must take, and we can tie that down with the minister when we meet him on Monday. And that we then will deal with the memorandum of understanding and any other business around the nutrition when we get back in February or January with the normal quarterly review. But we won't be able to do it before that. The other alternative methods is that we come back during recess. And I'm not in agreement with that because we know that everybody has got all sorts of commitments during that time that have occurred. Alliance, there's a conference, the ANC has a conference, all those type of things. So those are the options that we have. Can I open it up for discussion just around these two matters? But certainly the quarterly report will only take place in 2030. Mr. Sam.
Dear Chair, thank you very much. Just around this issue, I understand that we have a practical situation to deal with. And the practical situation is that at the end of January, the nutritional contract will come to an end, and it's clear to me that notwithstanding the commitments that were made to this committee and to Parliament, the department is either not willing or not able to install catching for inmates. And the practical problem is that under those circumstances, what do you do for 160,000 people without food? So the suggestion that you make is, under the circumstances, I think the only practical one that we can go with, and that is to allow extensions in the nutritional contract for a period of an objective 3 months, which would be more than enough if the process started now, to advertise for the contract and to make sure that it takes place both within the framework of the PFMA and the Constitution. But it does beg a lot more serious question, an existential question, which is one which I would want to have raised with the department on the 21st. And I want it to be placed on record that we must still have that discussion. And that was that at a particular point, about January this year, we were given a categorical assurance that insourcing was where it was at. We were given a categorical assurance that we would be given progress reports about the renovation and handover of the kitchen, and that at a particular point we suddenly told no, it's no longer core business, it's no longer the cheapest option, whatever the case might be. So in taking this decision, I do not want us to lose sight of the debate that we still have to have around what is core business, what isn't core business, and the extent to which a activity like producing food, which could provide work for inmates, is or is not the core business of the Department of Correctional Services. And I think that should also shape the extent to which we view the extension of the contract and the length to which that contract might be extended.
Any other view?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, whilst one looks at the circumstances that surround this particular issue, it actually gives rise to a number of other problems. The problem that I have basically, Chair, is that a principle is involved here. I have been a protagonist of self-sufficiency. Now, if the department wants this contract to be extended, because ostensibly, I underline ostensibly, they are not ready, the kitchens are not ready, then, Chair, the first question that arises is that the department had undertaken to, on a quarterly basis, keep this committee informed, together with Public Works, about the readiness, the extent of readiness of kitchens. So firstly, Chairperson, the question is, the department should be held to account to tell us exactly why they failed miserably since February up to now to give us quarterly updates. I've gone through the records and I find nothing where they came along and gave us quarterly updates. The department has failed us there. Secondly, Chairperson, I have been hearing of rumblings that this contract must be extended. Now, my problem, Chairperson, is that on the one hand, you have the department, which was lethargic, tardy, did not keep us informed. On the other hand, there is a sudden thing now that no, the contract must be extended. The principle of self-sufficiency, Chair, has always been inherent in centers of this nature, where the inmate population are utilized to do certain tasks, for example, cooking and that sort of thing. And the inmates played a major role, and in the process, also acquired skills. And it is also their person the only route that I believe that assists in rehabilitating people to an extent. By outsourcing this kind of service, Jefferson, tomorrow, mark my words, I'm not a prophet, mark my words, tomorrow the department where the officials will demand annual salary increases will come back and say that no, there is now something else that is not a core function. Up to now, the department has not appeared before us to tell us why they are not in a position to do what they said they will do from the 1st of February next year. And unless, Jefferson, we take a principled stand and hold those that are supposed to have done certain things to account, then we are letting them off. Next year they will want increased salaries, less work. Other functions are going to be on the line, Chair, mark my word. And they will want to outsource other functions as well. Chairperson, correctional services run certain agricultural activities. The object of running that agricultural activity has been to produce the ingredients in order to provide nutrition. And what happens now, Chair, is the next step will be that they'll let us outsource this agricultural activity. So where are we going to end up, Jefferson? And my pick, Jefferson, is that we are opening the floodgates of outsourcing. And you will never be able to control the game. This is to me, Jefferson, a principle. And I believe that what we are now going to do, Chair, under the circumstances, there may be errors to support it. But what we are hearing, and what I understand, is that the idea is not to tie us over for a limited period because of the so-called unreadiness of the facilities to book. The idea is to see that the necessary supply chain regulations are followed, that tenders are called, and that there be a due process. But Chairperson, for what is that due process going to be? For what period? And my take is, Chairperson, that we are destined in perpetuity to outsource food. Another question arises here. Why is it that only the major management areas, where you have the largest number of inmates, that only those facilities, only the nutrition of those inmates is to be outsourced? Why is it that a facility like Bergville in Northern Natal, why is it that that facility which has 130 inmates will have to provide its own nutrition? So, Chair President, I must put on the record that I am not happy with this decision. This decision is not based, sir, on a study, research that has been conducted and that should have been placed before this committee so that this committee could have made a decision informed by empirical evidence, by research. This deficit is not something that can be done on emotion. We are working here with taxpayers' money, Chair. And the unfortunate part is that few that are very, very rich, Chair, get richer by the day, and the overwhelming majority that are poor are getting poorer by the day. Is this the only option for us? No, sir. There are a multitude of options if we are prepared to take the trouble to look at them. You will find, Chair, that there are many ways of solving a problem. It cannot be one size fits all. And Jefferson, we have around every center in the country, we have poor communities. Amongst the poor communities, Jefferson, our sisters and our mothers and our grannies. We would have roped just people in to do the cooking. They fed us, they brought us up here. Are we now saying that they're not good enough to be empowered in this whole process? Sir, we are taking a step today, the seed of which will grow into a monster, and that monster will be outsourcing all the way. What we are also indirectly saying now, Chair, is that the PPP model is the model that one will have to support. At the end of the day, Chairperson, the department will remain a shell and everything else will be outsourced. And it is a dangerous road that we are traveling. On this road, Chairperson, the destination will be disaster. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm
voting against it,
and I would like it to be recorded, Chair. Thank you.
Now, Winnie, before you speak, you know, let's get something clear here. I think it is unfair to open up a debate where, first of all, the department is not here to respond. It should respond. So, Mamini, when you speak, there was a proposal on the table. I think members should be saying, as something said, as difficult as it is or as unacceptable as it is, let's take it but put these three conditions. Or, no, don't do it. So, Mr. Abdon, I think what you should be helping us with is saying that I don't like it, but this is the alternative, under the next 2 or 3 months. And I indeed we agree that when the department comes, the questions that you raise are questions that many of us support. But let's raise them when they are here, and let's hold them down to it. I do not reiterate what we've said. That it's not an extension of a contract, as it was done in the past. We can't ever accept that. That it's just a automatic renewal. What we are saying is that 31st of January, for 3 months, what the South is proposing. But in that period, the department ensures it does everything in its power. That if we went the route of outsourcing the nutrition, that is done in the police question. The second suggestion that the South has made is that we must first have debate that the South is talking about, around the principle of what is core and non-core business. Because that will inform whether we do this and for how long we do. That was the proposal we put on the table. Mamini, I don't want you to start a debate about the pros and cons of it, because nobody can answer it. Is there a proposal? Do you accept the proposal? Do you want to increase the proposal? And how do we take it forward? But I must be allowing members to get into the discussion, because there's nobody to respond to that discussion right now. So please, Mamini, can you help us, because we really are going to run very late. You've got our colleagues here from Legal Aid, and we still have a few sets of minutes. Mamini.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you, Chairperson, for questioning what Comrade Abraham is saying. I was also wondering, Chair, that how we debate on this issue. Because this issue is old, needs a government debate. I agree with you. But on a proposal, Chair, of 3 months, I've got a different view. You know, Chair, even now we're sitting on the problem whereby the department failed to report in time because of the pressure that we put at this committee today. Maybe end up now saying yes, by 2030 we are going to be ready, not even looking thoroughly that they really ready, are they going to be ready on 2013. So, Chair, I don't want to talk a lot. I'll talk with the department here about the report and whatever. Then I'll talk to the department. But on the proposal of if they extend it concretely, of 3 months, I'm going to view, Chair, that still we're putting a pressure that is not going to assist us. 3 months, Chairperson, is too little or short. Then I propose more than 3 months, at least 6 months. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, we've heard your views. Let's just put this in context. We see the department on the 9th of February for the first time. 10th of February, 19th of February, for the first time. We took after the State of the Nation next year, after the State of the Nation. I think what we should be doing is instead of us discussing 6 or 3 or 9 months, the principle is that we cannot extend this contract as it was done in the past. That's the principle. Now, whether they need 3 months, as the South is suggesting, or 6 months, you are suggesting, let's ask them to answer that question, and we can argue whether we think they are being reasonable or not. But the principle is, come the 31st of January, there is agreement that the thing will have a short lifespan. And that short, we're talking about it here. That short lifespan must be the time in which we have the debate around whether it's core or non-core, and therefore should it be outsourced or not. We also have a discussion of whether it is then going to be 3 month or a 6 month period Mongolia, in terms of which they must then have prescribed to the supply chain management, PFMA, fairness, transparency, and all those types of things. And we take it from them. Because there's nobody here that can tell us Mongolia whether it's 3 months or 6 months, which is reasonable time. It's a self-interest thing, 3 months. You seem to think otherwise. But I think the principle is it can't be a year. We can't just give them another extension as we did last year. We would have to find the middle ground so that it's open and nobody comes back and says this thing is done outside of the fiscal or supply chain management. Because definitely, AG has already said that the way it was done last year could have caused us some problems. So my proposal is we will meet with the minister very briefly on Monday. But as soon as possible, we'd have the department here to ask them the questions you've raised, Mr. Self, the questions you've raised, Baba Abraham, and the questions that you've raised, Mongolia. I just wanted to have some sort of agreement so that when we are away, nobody says, well, if we have the right, we are away with others, and some sort of discussion. Is that a fair summary? All right. We have Gula, we have Abraham. Okay. No. Yes, good. No, hold on. No, I haven't even looked at you.
No, Chairperson, yes, I'm not opening it up. Yes. I'm supporting the principle and also ask the honourable member to behave yourself. And this matter must confine this to limit the department.
Yes. All right. Because it was minutes, it has to be at minutes. We're not agreeing on this because it certainly is there. But we will continue this matter on the 19th of January and sooner if possible, starting from Monday. Can we move on to the last agenda item that we have before? And our colleagues from Legal Aid, you are more than welcome to come closer. We were just doing our own internal business. Please forgive us. It will take us one more minute before we come to you. Okay. Cindy suggesting that we leave the minister next week and continue with this business. Yes, all right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Colleague from Legal Aid Board, you've got a taste of the vibrancy of this comment. So we expect very much of the same when we get to you, but we welcome you. We'll ask you first to introduce your team, and we will do the same from our side so that we know who we're speaking to. Just to indicate that there is another meeting scheduled here for 12:30 in the south. 12 o'clock, 12:30. We'd like to be out of here by 12 o'clock. I'm sure I think we'd be out of here. 12:30, there's another engagement in this hall. We have just one agenda item. You have just requested that you brief the committee on some of the matters that we've raised over the years, and the last one being in our interaction with the inspecting judge a couple of months ago, and we've agreed that you can brief us on anything and everything, so it's not restricted to the matters that we've raised. Any matter that affects correctional services and the service to inmates retained or remand detention or sentence, you are at liberty to talk to. We will afford you, I don't know how much time it is, but 45 minutes or so, hour to give us a presentation, and we open it up to members to then engage with your presentation. And that's how we will proceed with our business. Our colleague from Correctional Services, Raham, I'm sure he has his observers. Colleague from the inspecting judge, we acknowledge you, and colleague from the media, you're more than welcome. My name is Vincent Smith, and I chair this committee.
My name is
Cindy Bolling,
and I'm the committee
secretary. Good
morning. My name is Member of Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Lady Kamala, I'm the member of the committee. Lady Kamala, I'm the committee.
Lady Kamala, Portfolio Committee.
Shalom Abraham, member of the Boxer Review Committee.
Chair, self, who can name that?
Leonard Max, member of the committee.
And there are two other members that are not here that are probably busy in other committees. We have got Mr. Nguni from Cook, that probably is with us, and Mr. Ndogo from the IFC, who is also with us, but there are several other committees that are in the same place, or they are busy with other committees. Mm-hmm. Can we have over to you, Judge, to introduce your team and get straight into the business of your presentation thereafter?
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for giving us this audience to come and read this committee. I am Judge Duncan Mlaho. I chair the Legislature of South Africa.
I'm Judge Mulashiti. I'm the deputy to the chairperson.
Paula Landy, regional operations executive for the Gauteng province. Cornelia Robinson, regional operations executive for Western and Northern State, South Africa.
Madam, the regional operations executive, KZN region.
Rania Lemkwede, regional operations executive for Western and Northern
State. I am Bupa Misa, regional executive for the Eastern Cape.
Paul Cassidy, Justice Institute of Tax and Justice Institute.
Thank you, Chair. That is the compliment that is here. The Chief Executive Officer and some other executives are caught up in the entry and told there's a big hold up, but they'll be making their way here. Thank you, Chair. Let me just repeat, Chair, my thanks for this opportunity to come and read this committee. This is an important facet, and as you know, I took it upon myself to send correspondence to yourself to ask to come and read this committee. We are here to brief this committee on what we do as the Legislature of Africa in relation to the remote population of this country. So just stop there, doesn't see my CEO has just walked in. Just introduce yourself.
Good morning. I'm Vizu Bedaraka, CEO. I apologize for being late. Our plane was late in Joburg.
Thank you. We sent an exhaustive presentation to the committee that sets out some background to what we do and our engagement with the committee. And we sort of divided the slides into responsibility areas of the people who are here. But Chair, subject to your guidance, I'm not sure whether you want us to read what we sent to the committee. Because what we've done is we've looked at the concerns that have been raised, right? And those concerns briefly are that there's always an absence of legal aid lawyers at correctional centres. The number of 40,000 remand detainees who did not have lawyers was mentioned. There's also the mention of the fact that there's no consultation with prisoners until they get to court. We've also seen a concern raised that cases are delayed without explanation, that there were more than 50 people who said they had been detained for between 3 to 4 years without their matters going ahead, that there are problems around the consultation facilities, the correctional facilities, and that problems around budget have also been mentioned. We've also dealt with the issues around the quality of the services we produce, that our quality is very poor, that the capacity of our lawyers was very lacking, and that they have a very heavy caseload, and that, I think I've mentioned this, but inmates see their lawyers for the first time in court. This has been repeated many times. Yes. That's just to summarize the number or the issues, the global issues that have been raised against legal aid in Africa. What I want to say, Chair, and that's what impelled me to send the letter to yourself to ask here, is that I have always offered myself and my public executives to cover this committee and to go elsewhere where we can assist this committee in its work. And I hope this invitation that we had to come here will continue in other sittings of this committee. Because there are issues that always crop up about us, and I'm not here and I don't know whether I should be here. So I'm extending that invitation, I'm offering myself. The other reason I'm being the chair is that more often than not, as we saw in the August sitting of this committee, the issues that are levelled as arise from allegations that the committee hears from inmates. That's what they are. Those are allegations. I want to believe we have demonstrated to this committee that when issues we can follow up are raised with us, we follow up and we give a report to this committee. I would like that to have to continue here because I think that's more constructive. Because issues are raised. 50 people, these are their names, this is where they are, this is what they say. We follow up those things and we give a report to the committee. Because as you have seen, Chair, when this committee went to the Free State last year, a number of complaints were raised by inmates. We investigated those and we gave this committee a report. Just to say, allegations are made to you that I did not see a lawyer. But when you look at the consultation notes, they tell you that that's not true. You know, some people say they were falsely guilty, but find that actually they pleaded not guilty in court and a trial took place. So I'm saying, Chair, it would be more constructive for this committee not to find them guilty before hearing a test. So I look forward to that robust engagement that you mentioned when you introduced us, Chair, in this meeting. So with those few words, Chair, could I hand over to my team just to brief the committee on the other issues that we have here? But as I said, it's subject to your guidance, whether you want us to go through everything that's here or whether you want us to follow a different procedure. We are ready in all respects and we're ready to answer whatever questions. That's why I've brought the team that you see here, the regional leaders of Legal Aid South Africa, who are in charge of the lawyers that serve all the correction facilities that are based in those regions. So I want to believe we are ready and able to deal with whatever queries that the committee can raise. Thank you. Lawyers in 2002, 2001 had very big loads. That's why at that time, and I've already admit this, at that time, yes, there was a practice of legal aid-based lawyers influencing inmates to plead guilty because they had the workload to deal with. That's history, Chair. That's what happened. The case files that are given to our lawyers are monitored, and there are supervisory quality senior lawyers who watch what they do on a daily basis. So that's the second issue. The third issue overall in terms of quality is we have an in-house quality assurance unit that looks at the work of these lawyers. If there's a file that's opened, did you consult? How many times did you consult? Did you search? And what case did you put up in court? We even have teams that observe these lawyers in court as to what they do. So I just wanted to deal with those three particular issues just to assure this committee that we are aware we have to provide quality legal services to ensure that people don't sit unnecessarily long in prison. I think let me just hand over to the CEO at this point, just to deal with the other issues, because I think the time that you've given a sort of influence for the other issues as well. Thank you.
It's fine. Before you come, maybe I should talk to the others so that you've taken your point that we will invite you to all our quarterly meetings. We have a quarterly meeting within 13 days, so you'll be there, even if you don't exhaust everything now. It's the beginning of a process. Every quarter we meet with the department and the inspecting judge, and we'll certainly have you as one of the invitees, as we have auditors, the audit committee, as we have the auditor general, you will also be invited. So even if you don't go through everything, ma'am, you certainly will, in the course of the next 12 months, have four other vice chairs, here, so to speak.
Divided our presentation up, we did go comprehensive, we want to every slide that we speak to the settings. So I will be just to give us an overview of legal aid of Africa today, what we do and all the issues we cover so that we can do a sense of good echoing. So it will give you a sense of the work we do, and also then within that we will talk to the programs that are linked to demand between. So if we move to slide 8, which is about the introductory comments have been made by our chairperson. Just to explain that in terms of legal aid today, we are an organization that is dealing with 428,000 plus new legal matters. So it's not advice matters, it's legal matters dealt with by legal practitioners, both criminal and civil, and of that, the advice, in addition to that, the advice matters that we deal with are 250,000 plus clients. So this is the last financial year. That's in the annual report that some of you have. The children we've assisted in this period is 27,000 plus. That includes children in conflict with the law, but also children in civil matters. And the percentage of civil matters that we do of the total of 428,000 is 11%. So the bulk of our work is providing assistance to clients with criminal matters. Our national footprint, that is our offices across the country, our delivery is done through our justice centers, and we already have an in-house salaried model, justice center model rather, and that is the way in which we deliver legal services. And linked to our justice centers, we have also satellite offices at different points. And so in total, we have 128 points at which we link with clients across the country. Our budget, the last financial year, $1.2 billion. And so that allows us to provide this assistance at the level and the scale we're doing. It is still much lower than others in the justice cluster, and therefore the issue of us being able to add on practitioners, add on additional capacity as required is not necessarily there, but that would be true for all services, and as you know, in terms of government budgets, that we have to make it with what we have. Our expenditure level, as you can see, is 99% plus consistently to ensure that all the money that we have, we are able to reach as many people as possible. And in terms of our financial management and our audit status, this last financial year was the 11th consecutive year in which we had an unqualified audit, and we also maintained that and ensured that we weren't allowing slippage on that. In terms of the people that we have in next slide that delivers the services that we are talking about. We have 2,600 plus staff employed by us, and of the 79% of those staff are lawyers, including paralegals. So that means that they are then involved in the delivery of legal services, as we explained. Our recruitment levels are maintained at a high level to ensure that they are there to be able to do that, so it's sitting at 96%. And our staff turnover rate, excluding CA, which is contract staff, is low at 4.6% per annum. We also, because we are providing services ourselves, we spend a lot of time ensuring that our people issues are dealt with so that our people are satisfied and can provide the service, and therefore we are currently accredited for the fourth year as one of the best employers in South Africa. In slide 10, this just talks to the national footprint that I mentioned, and I won't go into all the details, but you can see the breakdown for province where we have also justice center satellite offices, but also to explain that every division of the high court, we have a high court unit that deals with those centers, and then we also have civil units. If we move on, the number of matters we do in terms of different types of delivery systems, slide 11, you can see that 96% of the work is done by ourselves, 4% by GCare practitioners that is outsourced to people outside private lawyers, and then we also have cooperation agreements with NGOs, university law clinics, etc. also exist, and then we have agency agreements where, with particular GCare firms, we provide services at specific courts. And then moving on in terms of slide 12, about the types of matters we do across the courts, and you can see that in terms of all the courts we have a presence, and 2 or 3 years ago we did a study of the court law and we found that in district courts we provide assistance to 50-60% of all matters on the trial road. And the 50-60 there is related to the fact that in district courts we do not assist with minor matters because in those instances people do not qualify for legal aid, and essentially those would be where you have the option for fine or for the prison sentence of less than 3 months. So in that, so that's why that's lower. But in regional and high courts we have, you can see a great presence. In regional courts we're doing 70-80% of the matters in the total, and in high courts over 80%. And if we move on through all those slides, we just talk further to the different kinds of matters we do, the criminal as well as civil. Also on slide 14, the pending matters, which is the matters that are currently held by practitioners. But importantly, on columns on the right, it talks to the issue of backlog, which links to a turnaround time, and for each court type, we set the turnaround time, and we work with the National Case Backlog Committee, and we ensure that we track those matters. So where they are things within our control, and where our practitioners are involved, we are tracking those on an ongoing basis. And moving on in terms of slide 14 and 16, talking again to the children and the civil matters that we do, and again moving on to slide 17, talking to the medium-term expenditure framework, the MTEP, and our budget, and the budget cuts that we expect of $84 million over the next 3 years. At the moment, we're waiting to see whether this will come through and what of it will come through. That's the same cut that everyone in government has, as you would know, 1%, 2%, and 3% over each of the next years. But for us, the impact was shown by 18, and we have shared that with the Portfolio Committee on Justice, where we indicated that this would mean for us, because we run a fairly lean ship, that it would mean that it would impact on hope. So over 3 years, it's possible that about 60 posts will be cut. And in terms of the last slide, 19, that I was hoping to explain, that we have requested additional capacity to improve our practitioner cohort ratio, amongst other things that we need to ensure that we continue to deliver a service at the level that would allow us to fulfill our mandate. Moving on to the program that we have linked directly to remand detainment, because that's the focus of this discussion, our regional operation executives from Gauteng and from KwaZulu-Natal, Salam Daka and Rona Lamzi will take you through a few of those slides, and then we'll wrap up and then we can take questions. Thank you, Chair.
The program mentioned in more detail are a pre-call negotiation with our CG plan. So I'm going to explain to you the programs that are linked directly to the correctional services, the programs that we have at all, and then our links to stakeholders. So firstly, the link to correctional services on slide 23. you will see the breakdown of the justice centers. As Lottie earlier pointed out, we have 64 justice centers and 64 satellite offices that are linking to the correctional centers in each province. That is in the second block column, the correctional services. So that reflects the linkage as well as the remote names, the numbers that are there. We've got a dedicated program that links the 20% of correctional cases, which houses 80% of the remand detainees. But that does not mean that the others are not covered, they are covered as well. But in these specific cases where there are very high numbers of remand detainees, we have specific awaiting or remand detainees that are legal, that goes in on a regular basis. That's the only job they have, is to go into the prisons on a daily basis and consult with the remand detainees in those prisons for the buildings that house the 80% of the remand detainees. So if you look on page 24, it gives you the statistics that shows for the year to date, for the quarter 1 and quarter 2, they have consulted with just under 12,000 remand detainees in these prisons, and it also gives you the reason the justice centers in the second column where they are situated. I move on to the slide 25, which explains that we have a specific link with the trial or the remand detainees that are legal. However, in all other prisons, we also have dedicated what we call prison clinics, where our management staff goes once in every 2 months, or depending on the numbers and the demand there is, to have a specific clinic that then addresses a number of prisoners and or inmates, and then also addresses their queries, and they take complaints and questions directly from them. They are then also given opportunity to apply for legal aid if they have not applied for legal aid previously. Moving on to slide 26, we also have an advice line. Now, this call, we have a call center and a toll-free line, which was primarily aimed at civil clients. However, we have found that approximately 10% of our calls are from accused persons, most of whom are in custody. And then, during the first half of this financial year, quarter 1 and quarter 2, we had 2,679 persons calling our center for assistance. We maintained legal advice on all their matters, and we also refer the matters to the closest justice center in order to facilitate the process. I'm then moving on to, or if I can just stand still here, which is not in the slide, but just for your information, also to mention that we also have a program where we have a practitioner support model. However, our practitioners get one day out of court for consultation and preparation, and on these days, they also visit prisons in order to consult with their clients where it is possible. Then I'm moving on to the services that we provide in court. We have a reception court program whereby we place two practitioners at each reception court visit to ensure that each person that comes through the system, into the system, and that are new in the system, gets an opportunity to be consulted with. In the first consultation process, their legal aid application gets taken, while one person is in court, the other person then consults with the practitioner. Presiding officers are also engaged to encourage all unrepresented accused to apply for legal aid. However, our experience is that presiding officers are very keen for every person to apply for legal aid, and it is very seldom that we don't see a presiding officer encouraging people to apply for legal aid. Then the practitioner support model is specifically so designed in that way as well to encourage that at least remand, our practitioner gets opportunity to consult with their clients at court. There are challenges in visiting prisons, which we will talk to later, and we are working with correctional services, but the opportunity is allowed at every remand session at court for our practitioner then to consult. The paralegal, as I pointed out, this is the prison. On page, slide number 29, the automatic review step. This is very important to look at this, to see an automatic review reflects accused people who went through the system unrepresented before a magistrate was sent and terminated the hearing. And if you look at the stats from financial year 203, that is 30,000 people that went through the system unrepresented to the last financial year, which is 6,359. Then it is, we are now sitting, when we started out at 100%, if you take 6,000 at 100%, we are now sitting at 21%. This means that legal aid has ensured that people are going through the system represented and not unrepresented. We continuously need to reduce that number. Bail application requirements. As legal aid, we are very concerned with the position of our inmates, and specifically with regards to bail. All our practitioners have been trained on the two-stage bail approach and enforced that at court where as well as possible. The two-stage bail approach, I think everybody knows that when bail has, when a magistrate has decided or determined that an accused is a suitable candidate, then the bail amount must follow, must be affordable. In instances where this does not happen, we are also now taking these matters on bail appeals and enforcing the legislation. The payment of bail is then monitored by our practitioners at an ex court appearance. If a person comes back, they haven't paid their bail, they then bring a bail application for the reduction of bail. They are also monitored on all the bail application platforms. Management of guilty pleas. If the person has been leveled against legal aid on many occasions, we have introduced various measures to do this. Transit attorneys are not allowed to tender a guilty plea without a supervisor signing off on it. This has been not well received by our stakeholders. However, we are standing on our point there that this must be monitored by supervisors and permission must be granted, even if that means that the matter gets postponed for a day or two. It should also be noted that Section 112 guilty plea statements are read into the court record and therefore presiding officers also have duty to verify from the accused that the statement is in accordance with their instruction. We also notice that these guilty pleas are in writing. We have often investigated allegations made by prisoners that they have been forced to plead guilty. However, from our investigation, it seems that this is actually not true. So, slide number 32, moving on, gives you a breakdown of our guilty pleas that we are managing. If you look at this very interesting point, we have had 196,345 criminal matters year to date. 52,000 were struck on the roll. Total guilty pleas of this is 27,000. If you take the total number of matters that we have dealt with in the first 3 quarters of this financial year, it is 14%. And if you take it without the matters that have been struck on the roll, it's 49%. Taking into consideration that the NPA take matters to court where they have a prima facie case, it is a very good indication that they are not forcing anybody to plead guilty. Slide 32 sets out the client consultation program. I have explained that to you in terms of using our opportunities at our consultation day in order to consult with our clients, and this is monitored by the supervisors as explained by the chairman previously. We also have children waiting to file program where we monitor each and every child that is in custody and ensuring that their matters are we also have a program, as previously explained, that every person that is in remand detention longer than 2 years of waiting trial are monitored, specifically tracked, and the reasons for it looked at. On slide 37, there is a breakdown of the outlines that are in remand detention longer than 24 months. Program means the stakeholders. Legal aid for Africa has a very close relationship with all stakeholders in the criminal justice system, whereby we look to stakeholder caseload meetings at local level, at provincial level, and a national level. We specifically link with correctional services in order to draft protocols to ensure that challenges that are preventing us from having access to prisons that we like are being removed, and where there are ICDVs, we used to call them ICDVs, we also link with them and we drive our confirmation protocol. Protocol with DCS, I have alluded to that. The protocol is to ensure that there's better cooperation and better access for our practitioners at prison. And I think that's all my time.
In our policy, as you call it, in terms of foundation, we have seen a lot of provide who are employing industry all the other levels. We have support and center oppositional in terms of preparation and solving. We also have a skill of training in criminal program that is just attended at the national office level. The friendship and coaching program for all oppositional is high, far and higher levels of support. Specific programs, including the court program programs for the court against both of the programs, the ambition program as well, to make sure they get the time that they are preparing for ambition. We have set a point for an official to be up to
there are in fact actions in respect for sex in house or language and discussion forums where sexual exchange discussions between the South and the legal views data where we exchange some foreign views between the lawyers. We have the legal policy assessment reviews by the independent nation as well as the independent by our legal professional unit based on our external organizational office and show the compliance standards for organization. We conduct peer reviews. We have taken the feedback that including whether interaction with all design officers on performance or participation of station and their costs. We have biannual performance management assessment reviews for all practitioners based on their client performance conduct. We also give issues of complaints in terms of when clients are going to issue during that administration from the meeting. We also have very well information responses we use to inform business or ongoing basis. Information that I can complete business in person of things. We look at the time shows, the system around the delivery and according to general parity, especially assessment, the faculty, health facilities, and performance of our positional statistical category. And it's one of the traditional caseload management already given by the judge. The general super employed positional support model with the allocated position of the cost. But I'm therefore paying for the single cost on only hanging the mechanism of the cost. All the other come up with the cost board that is a because it engage both and future frequency to show that only managing the number of cases are paid on the roll. They pay for the position of students have to prepare from the case. In other words, trying to arrange in terms of the perimeter to be dealt with in the public day. All of the positions are placed to set aside day to be determined the case to for the delegation data report, which is the we undertook to investigate the way the environment has been filed with each inmate made a complaint. Our findings of each of the complaints made was that the allegations were uncovered and investigated in the area. A detailed schedule of our findings brought at the time to the Portfolio Committee. During 2012, the Portfolio Committee said joined by personal publicity. We invited both our local medical authorities as well as national medical assets to issue the insertion. According to local management, so many issues were raised by agents during the walk around. Our regional operations versus experience the committee of auditions of our health programs as well as our consultation procedures.
Thank you, Ted. Well, I think the presentation should now have reflected very clearly that in terms of the mandate that we have as Legal Aid South Africa, we ensure that there are programs, there are measures in place to provide the service that we are required by the law to provide to those who cannot afford private legal fees. And in this regard, we put in place all kinds of programs to deal with those issues. And particularly to the very issue that we were talking about, the demand for detainees. And sir, let me also take this opportunity to thank you for the offer and the undertaking that says from now here on, we will be invited to come and attend these committee meetings, and also when the committee does visits, that we will be invited, because we believe that it's through engagement with the committee and other stakeholders that will be able to address problems and issues. And if I may reiterate what the chairperson has said, our commitment as the Legal Aid South Africa is that we will deal with problems as and when they are raised. And we're not naive to think that there would be no problems or challenges arising, because we're dealing with human beings, not dealing with machines. So there will now and again be problems that arise, and we would like to deal with them as and when they arise. Yes, I didn't hear what the Honourable Member was saying today, but just to repeat what I was saying, that we commit ourselves to work very closely with the committee, and we will come and support as and when we are called to do so. And also the other point, the Chair, is working together with the correctional services, we think that would improve our capacity, our ability to deliver efficient and effective service. Those that require our
services. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. We will open up to members. I didn't allow members to heckle you when you were speaking. I'm not expecting you to heckle members when there is questions. These are serious matters. Give me a practical example. You know, I feel that since you say that you spoke about practitioners at court. My understanding is that an inmate gets taken from Joburg Central, goes to Fox Street, and he meets a practitioner. That's my understanding of practitioner and court. The question that I want to raise with you is, does the practitioner go to Joburg Central? And if he does go to Joburg Central, where does he consult with that inmate? Because the Constitution talks about adequate time, and the Constitution talks about adequate facilities. Now, I can tell you that Joburg Central probably doesn't have adequate facilities. I can tell you that. And if you think that the inmate meets the legal aid practitioner only when he gets to Fox Street in Johannesburg, then I'm asking the question, is that adequate time? Because the Constitution talks about adequate time and adequate facilities. So I want to get to a practical one. The inmate in Johannesburg remand detention. When does he see you? What process do you follow? Because the report that we are getting is that they only see you when he gets to court. That's the report we get. He only sees you when he gets to court. You never go to the Johannesburg Central Remand Detention to consult with them. If you think you consult them, please explain to me where do you consult with them, what facility do you use to consult with them. Because when I'm there, it's certainly the facility that consults with them. So that's the one area that I think you must talk to. The second issue, you know, I'm waiting for a report. You spoke about your monitoring of bail. The last report that I received, I think under Director of getting it confirmed, there's something like more than 6,000 inmates that are sitting in there because they can't afford bail of 1,500 rand. Something like that. I'll get the exact figure in a minute. But there are quite a number of inmates that are there purely because they cannot afford bail of 1,500 rand. And you've indicated to us that you do this monitoring. I'm saying to you that, and I'm talking just Johannesburg and St. Helens, that if we went there today, we find inmates that are in our facilities because they can't afford 1,500 rand. And you come to us and you say to us that you have this process. So please talk to us about your bail application that you spoke about earlier on. And the final point that I want to make to them, that's why I'm asking you, do you only see them there? When we went to Johannesburg with the National Prosecuting Authority, we heard allegations that were not disputed at the time, that there is sometimes collusion between the investigating officer and the prosecuting authority in some cases. Where if I don't write the investigating officer, I don't get my day in court. This is happening in Johannesburg. If you guys are legal aid and you are not on the facility, but you are in court, it means that that case you never made here. Because for somebody just to go from the remand detention to court, he needs to drive the investigation officer. So that's why I'm asking this question, that if you are only at court and not on our facilities, then I don't think you're doing those type of people like service. So you could answer those three questions and I'll talk to the members. Just your bail protocol, the whole issue around 6,000, 10,000, three will find that for you in a minute. Because we think it's got too many people that are there that should not be there. And where do you consult these people and do you know about this? Because if you're only consulting, of course, that you're missing out quite a few people because they're just not prepared or unable to afford to find somebody for them to have their aid.
I will start with Johannesburg. It's a known fact that the consultation facilities at Johannesburg is not up to standard and that there are more issues than just the consultation facilities. It is also the situation at the home itself. We are investigating that at the moment. It's also the detention of correctional services. At Johannesburg prison, we also have a paralegal that consults with the clients there as dedicated paralegal, like the programs that I have explained. And if you look at the statistics from the specific paralegal in the first two quarters of the financial year, the paralegal has consulted with more than 2,000 people already in Johannesburg, where they have the legal aid applications that people do want to. The life of legal aid, the paralegal is in the facility on 4 days out of them in a week, sometimes 5 days in a week. So we have that footprint and that presence there. It is true that it is very difficult sometimes for our practitioners to consult at prison. Therefore, we have to make opportunities of every opportunity at court to consult. But one day, for consultation and preparation, also dedicated to make an appointment, go and see specific clients that they felt that they haven't had a proper consultation with yet. There are various challenges in accessing the prison. However, in our meeting with DCA, we have isolated these challenges. We have addressed it in a memorandum of understanding. And I do understand that they are at the moment distributing the memorandum of understanding to their region for comment. And once this is implemented, it will really alleviate our plight in terms of access to it. And I do understand in terms of constitution that there should be adequate consultation. However, that's been our quality review program kicks in, and all the consultation notes are on each file. And the supervisor is looking at that in terms of ensuring that all the points have been covered and that adequate consultation has taken place. It goes to the extent, and again, much to sometimes the anger of presiding officers or stakeholders, but our practitioners will stand up in court and when they haven't had the opportunity to adequately go ahead, inform a presiding officer that I need an opportunity to further consult and insist on that consultation. And that is all documented on the file and in the facility requirements. The monitoring of them, I don't know if I just want to add to that because I think the general program not only isolated to Johannesburg and Helsinki, but However, we monitor the bail. We cannot enforce a line of officer's advice. But what we can do is to ensure that we bring the bail application. And if that bail application is not successful, and if they are there to take it further, to ensure that we take this on review or send to a higher court if possible. Just to highlight the issue is that on the walk around in Johannesburg with your visit there were 3 complaints made against people when one of us got out one complaint in regard to theft. When we have looked into the matter, we have seen that a bail application is brought, it was refused, a second bail application is brought, it was refused, and there was not really merit in terms of taking the process any further, we could not take it to a higher court. However, if we talk about monitoring, it has happened in terms of the fact that we have even brought a second application. The other 2 matters were people that had indicated that they have not had seen their lawyers and that they have not had consultation for a while. We looked into these matters as well and found out that these matters were partly heard matters, which were at an advanced stage, and that the consultations happened already up until that time. And it wasn't meaning matters. It was matters where it was proceeding towards the end of the same step. In terms of the allegations, I cannot really speak about that in terms of the fact that we do get our family with those who present the same application for legal on a daily basis into all the people that are there. I would just find it strange that the person can be held in a correctional facility without a warrant and not going to court. Somewhere there must be a warrant for the service, and I don't know about this allegation, but we can surely investigate further from outside the client. However, I do feel comfortable that we have access to the premise in terms of ensuring that every person that needs legal aid has an opportunity to apply for.
That person who was here before in that place, the investigating officer, has tried to be present for delays. What we are getting is that that investigating officer could not say, don't bring him here because we've not finished the investigation. Some are saying it's a problem. This is a such problem. But if you are supposed to give somebody the legal aid that they require, those are matters that we think you should be looking at. Because it's unlawful detention. At worst, it's unlawful detention. And expecting that has a role to play, but certainly, if you are on site, you won't have a role to play. That's the way that
I agree with you, but what I am saying is that we have our family looking
at
prisons on a daily basis, taking the complaints and the queries from everybody in the industry.
That's very briefly, then I want to open up for questions.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to talk about that last point. I think let's also not lose sight of the fact that the shielding of court appearance is controlled by the court. Controlled by the court. And I know that our practitioners are vigilant to unnecessary requests for postponement by the NPA because the investigation is continued. But at the end of the day, we don't control the enrolling of men, but we make sure that when matters come to court, they come to court. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, go now against the 4 members. Mr. Sam will be followed by Mr. Fele, will be followed by Mr. Matabula, will be followed by Mam Gwenya, Balito, and then Advocate Max in that order. But you might stop halfway so they can respond, but we don't lose those questions that we'll have a second on the next. Myself, yours.
Thank you, Chair. My first question is, not being covered by yourself, in what constitutes a proper consultation? Because I have a case that I'm dealing with at the moment of somebody who's sentenced to 15 years for murder on the basis of a 1.5-page confession, which, you know, was on the face of it, at least, done by a legal aid practitioner. Now, I'm not saying that there was merit in that or not merit in that. It just seemed to me that it was a little bit skimpy, this particular confession on which to have evoked a very serious sense. And I wondered whether people have the space and the opportunity to actually go into background circumstances, extenuation, all that sort of thing that should, in my view, form part of the consultation that that a legal aid practitioner gets involved in. Second question is, I think I heard you to say that there are some people who didn't qualify for legal aid, or the CEO, on the basis that the sentence would get, I think, 3 months or with the option of a fine. Now, I obviously understand that the economy of scale of the order that you're dealing with 100,000 people, but it does seem to me, on the other hand, that you're facing a real risk here, particularly with first-time offenders, people who have committed relatively minor offences, that by excluding them from legal aid, they may then be able to find themselves in a prison for the first time, become more criminalized by virtue of being incarcerated, and therefore compounding the problem rather than solving the problem. And I just wondered whether we are giving the necessary attention to particularly first-time offenders, relatively minor offenses, and dealing with the intervention there. Finally, just in respect of the visit that we undertook to Johannesburg, there were a very large number of foreign nationals there, people who didn't speak English. And one of the difficulties that they articulated was obviously that it was difficult to find lawyers who spoke their language. And I just wondered whether there was a plan in place to deal with that particular challenge. Thank you, Chair.
Let's take Mr. Ferrer, then Mr. Makarula, and we'll allow you to respond, and then you'll take that in. Mr. Ferrer.
I'll talk about presentation paper. There were quite extreme constraints and not that bad, the 82,000 cases. I just want to find out how many cases have been finalized out of these 82,000. Then I'm going to step you in. This is related to the sexual issues that are taking place in our center. I presume these are offender on offense. These speaker that we're seeing here. How many have been finalized and what are the standards imposed on those cases? Then on the next page. Page 20, platform. Which is the amount that is affordable? Because in some cases, when you do our oversight, there are people who are there who cannot afford a sale of less than 1,000. Which is affordable? If you can inform us the number. Then the last one, page 3. Just less. I just want to find out what is the reason for clients not to honor the appointment when you visit them.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Mahakulam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have this first question, which I would like Dutch example to answer on it. Before Dutch example, you were new as a legal aid board, and now legal aid South Africa. I want just you only to answer this question. But also, Chair, the challenge that we're having is that when you make a visit, like we make it in Tata, they complain. Not even they complain. Somebody already charged. But when you ask why you are here, because you have a fine of 500 rand, and he said, no, the dealer thinks that I have to admit that I'm guilty. So, and you check, there are many of them. Same similar thing. So, we felt that no man does. Certain things that maybe is wrong with our legal aid. And then also, this issue of the fine. You'll find that, look, it costs the state more money. And that person will stay here for maybe 3 months. and you said you're filing 0500. And then when you ask, do you have a lawyer? He said, yes, my lawyer was delayed. And then we feel that, no, is the lawyer working against the state or with the state? Another thing, the challenge is that I heard one from the side say you have a challenge to visit correctional centers. Really, number of your clients are there, and you only go to see them in court. And according to this report, it shows that you meet with the client on the day where the court have to decide on the case. So I think you don't frequently visit the client, and then really it gives us a problem that how can you work with a person that you don't visit and get the entire information. Also, the postponement of case. Legal aid, they like to postpone because when they ask, when why you postpone this, they said, no, we've got a lot of cases. So, really, this thing, is not from us. It's from down there. We interact with the people in the correctional center. And then it's where we get this information. It's not that it's only us that assuming that no, let's call the legal aid of Africa and speak with them. But we get this information when we visit them. A number of the people that are in the correctional facilities, they complain about the legal aid. Admission of it. Not visiting in the facility. Except by sector.
Does the law union simply respond to these and then you go on to Mongolia, India, police and advocate?
Thank you, Chair. I think I'll just choose one. I just want to respond to one and one very general response, Chair. The first one is people who we exclude in terms of our guides because they are facing less serious offenses. I think the concern expressed is that people then get convicted and are sentenced and becoming more criminalized. I think the other side of the coin is we deal with a larger problem. The people we call the not so poor. The people who fail the main test, but who can objectively not afford their representation. That's a bigger problem. That's why we introduce policies to say there should be perhaps a contributions policy that if your means can take you for a year, we will represent you for the whole 3 years, but that's the end of the story. Then I thought these people change. And I think we've done that priority. If we have to look at the category that the Honorable, I think it's Self mentioned, then we will have to go back and ask for more funds. Because we introduced the contributions policy to make sure that we make the legal money we get going up. In representing the people who fail the minister as well as getting in the hand of and facing the issue about foreign nationals.
What is the minister? Can you explain that to us? When you say minister, are you saying somebody in the X amount? But can you just please tell members what is the minister? Because we doesn't need hearing it for the first time now.
Will you or any of you can just explain more about the minister? Thank you.
Jefferson, do you want to first respond to the issue of the salary and then move on? Patrick Hanmark was our legal development agency because he works with the Legal Aid Guide.
Good morning, Chair. Chair, in terms of the Legal Aid Act, we have to submit on an annual basis to Parliament a document called the Legal Aid Guide. It sets out how we administer the legal aid scheme in terms of who qualifies on what basis they qualify for what types of cases. The latest guide was approved both by National Assembly, National Council of Provinces in September 2011 and November 2011, came into operation on the 23rd of February 2012. The means test, we've got to understand the Constitution has a provision that if you're unable to afford the cost of a legal representation, you must pay substantial injustice. What the means test does, it administratively can determine for us whether someone is indigent or poor without having to go into a longer inquiry. And that deals administratively with about 99% of our cases. So that if you qualify to serve as a means test, and for someone that's accused, 6,000 rand less any income tax in means test, and then you must own assets. If you have no immovable property of less than 100,000 rand, if you own an immovable property or a house less than 500,000 rand, so we look at both income as well as assets, and that's the means test we require. If you see the means test, then we do look at a contribution scheme depending which court you are charged, if district court, regional court, or high court. But the longer the duration and the greater the complexity, the greater the chance that you won't be able to afford your cost of legal representation. We have then a national committee at the national office that considers anyone that then exceeds the means test to determine how we would assist them and then what terms in terms of the contribution, and there's a policy in terms of we determine that. So that's the means test to then be able to determine who qualifies.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. I think I was dealing with the issue of foreign nationals and whether we can have lawyers who speak their language. I think that's idealistic. I agree that they have. They should assist it in their language. But it has become a system that's abused, because people who speak these foreign languages, who offer themselves as interpreters, charge exorbitant fees just to offer their interpretation services. So we caught between two extremes, but we still try to do our best. I think that's what I can say. But if we are expected to cover all of these gaps, let's just be aware that there's a huge financial implication. This whole thing. I think that's what I want to say. The other issue, Chair, is Legal Aid Board, Legal Aid South Africa. When I took over in 2002, some of the perceptions and misconceptions that I expressed in some of the statements we hear today and in some other reports from this committee and other committees of parliament are perceptions. They emanate from that era, where the organization was dysfunctional, was rooted in corruption. And when I took over, I said, I want to clean up this organization, I want to change it, I want it to be constitutionally compliant. We are in the process of changing the Legal Aid Act, the 1969 Act. We want to say, we want to bring a post-constitution act that deals with legal aid. So our name change is informed by that view that we need to be seen that we are a different institution from the one that people know of and hear of. And it's actually telling Chair that the committee doesn't know what the means test is. Because those who followed the Kuremas cases, the Gary and Polish matters, will know that these are people who failed the means test. And then they tried to go to court to force us to give them legal aid. We resisted, we fought, we got advocates to fight. And we ensured that the highest court in the land set the parameters for us, that people who don't qualify in terms of the following information, you can't fund, or you can fund the following. So I think it's why I hope that future engagements with this committee, the legal aid guide that Patrick talks of, if it is available to this committee, for the committee to read and understand what is this legal aid scheme that we are planning in this country, it will help. The larger comments made by Honorable Magagula said, I'm unable to respond to that because they're general. I think the effort is more perception than fact, and it's difficult for me to change it. Can I ask my other committee members to deal with the other issue? Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you.
Chair, I think obviously in terms of the issue of sentencing over 60 years and a 1.5-page confession, it's difficult to deal with those kind of issues too. As we said, we've got the mechanisms from a quality control mechanism. If there was a problem, we would have to be able to assess that petition and be able to address it. And I think my perspective is there is a concern. We not as an organisation, I'm prepared to go and have a look at it, at a specific case, because then we know about it, we can deal with it, and then we can take corrective action. And I think from that perspective, but we have our general quality reviews where we both look at the file review, and we also do go to court. And we have an independent unit linked to our internal audit department, so that the audit is not only done by the managers at the office themselves, but there's an independent verification from our internal audit department
that goes out and specifically looks at these files that they select randomly, and they also go to court to see these practitioners. So from that, our interventions are large. We can't cover every single case, but the systems and the processes are in place that we can have. Specifically, if we've got a problem with a practitioner, you'll be able to see the practitioner in the file, and you'll be able to address it from a quality intervention perspective in terms of the training that they might need, even removing them from their court if you don't feel they're able to get into it. In terms of the availability of experts for attenuating circumstances, if you want to lead evidence, we have a specific fund for experts. So the practitioners can come to us. There's different levels in terms of who can authorize different levels of experts, depending on the quantum of the cost. Obviously, we don't have them in our employ. You have to employ them from outside, and some of them can be costly. But we do have that. We've got a specific budget available. We have a process in terms of how our practitioners are able to then access that funding for their clients. And we encourage it, because we're saying, ultimately, you've got to be able to present those experts where you need them to ensure the best possible thing to your client. In terms of sentences less than 3 months in exclusion from guide, I think if you understand and look at the guide, it's only in the district court for misunderstanding. If you appear in the high court or the regional court, there's no limitation. We don't concern ourselves with the type of matter you must then disqualify in terms of the means test. Because if they're serious enough, you're facing 15 years. In a district court, we list the cases from which we give assistance. It's very much the classic offences, the failure to render your tax returns, those kind of issues for which you don't give legal representation. Previously excluded shoplifting in your normal theft case, common assaults. But what we found was, when we were looking at you, we were seeing statistics on automatic reviews, that where someone's not legally represented and they're sentenced to more than 3 months or 6 months, depending on the experience level of the magistrate, their cases go on automatic review. And over the last 10 years, we've discreet them nationally from about 30,000 down to 6,000. So that's the indicator for us in terms of what is happening and why people are being automatically. When we investigated it, we found there was a specific type of case. Drunken driving was another example where we excluded legal aid. Because people were facing more than 3 months direct imprisonment in those assaults, drunken driving, theft cases, we then brought them back in and included them in the scheme because we had the evidence to then show that the people were facing substantial justice. So we are aware of it, to watch it. There is also discretion for our justice and for the executives. Specifically, different circumstances can be different presiding officers in a certain area because the crime is prevalent. In the normal circumstances, wouldn't face direct imprisonment, but may their circumstances face it. The Justice and Executive does have a discretion in those circumstances to authorize legal aid. So it's not a total bar on it. They can also then adapt to their specific circumstances. I think just to then deal with those issues.
On the affordable side, I think Dr. Sotelle asked what is the amount. The question is, do you fight for your client? That's the question. Because somebody is there because he was urinating in the street or drinking alcohol, and he gets a bill of $1,000. A client of lawyer will argue that his client pays unreasonable. The question that Sotelle is asking, do your practitioner do that? Because we find very many people would pay them out for things that we don't even think they're sitting around for prayer point. So the question is, do you fight for your client when they get bailed
decided by the deciding officer that you might think it's unreasonable.
Could you
be
assured that that policy review process, like the vision format, if you check out later, it is absolutely in our basic interest for us not to get the data report. This is the view of my
mind you, okay, I suppose that was your thing with gender, but there was a fiction around legal aid sort of ethics encouraging people to plead guilty at the time, and then the case was gone, I think those were the quality. I'm saying, are you saying that the quality control and quality check was the soft one, because it's specific, are encouraging sending to you guys so that you can do something? But on the others, unless you think covered in your general, and it was not specific, then we can ask the other members of the jury that have a sense. But you can speak and you'll follow up. Can you ask that? And then you'll follow up with that.
Thank you, Chair. Not to do with the postponement and the debate of suitability and people being in jail. I know that the usual chair of the magistracy in all the other to say they should be sensitive to the circumstances of people when they impose bail. But they do not analyze it before they are even convicted. But what I can offer, and that goes on for us also to the postponement, is we can do a study. If we are told which period, which area are we accused of asking for postponement, we can do that. We can come back and report to each other, as well as the main situation, right? Where, how many people, how many represented by us? Then we can, I think it will cut this perception and deal with the real issues in that level. Thank you
very much, Mr. Chairperson. I am from Eastern Cape. One of the members, Makagula, did mention of a visit to the Mthatha Correctional Center. Mr. Chair, I would want to record that our paralegal visits the Mthatha Correctional Center twice a week. We also have what you call legal clinics, where our qualified practitioners go to the correctional center in order to advise inmates of their rights. The last of such visits, Mr. Chairperson, was on the 5th of November. That was the last visit that we had there. And you also mentioned, Mr. Chair, that we do have a very good working relationship with what used to be complacent visitors. They are currently called independent correctional center visitors. We would expect, Mr. Chair, that those independent visitors will inform us if inmates are forced or coerced by our practitioners to plead guilty. I may even go further, Mr. Chair, that there was also mention about the husbands in Port Elizabeth. I wish to record, Mr. Chair, that there are consultation facilities to St. Albans Prison. I may also add to say that even there, we have very good working relations with the independent correctional center visitors. I may mention that personally myself, I make the head of the ICCV in the area, Mr. Foray. I met Mr. Foray on the 7th of November, and he confirmed with me that he was very happy with the service that is delivered to the inmates at St. Albans Prison. I made it clear to Mr. Foray that I would want him to inform me of any issues that are there that his IPCs are reported to. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
But we get back to you on St. Albans, the horror stories that we see in St. Albans. We'll give you the facts and nothing is your fault, but we will give them to you because clearly things are not right in St. Albans. Mom, you follow. Ms. Nguenia, Aliso, Max, and then you'll follow Abraham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. No, hey, we can't deal with people of leaders because their work also is to defend people and defend themselves. So, the introduction issues is really what we mean is people who still have always to defend. I want to remind the legal aid that this committee got a responsibility of visiting the centers, which we call oversight. Whatever we were saying, we were not taking maybe only by hearsay or maybe whatever it could like. Who are writing this report and deciding to call the extent that we can get a clarity of how are we going to work together to make this government work effectively? Whatever we're saying about Lambo, we're taking from the image. I would like here to invite the legal aid when we go to oversight, that they have to be part of us, so that they can exercise what we are doing. Because if I'm listening here, I'm listening the Judge Lambo trying to defend himself as if whatever we're saying, we're just taking it from the air. It's not like that. We want to change our country together with you, because you are just like us, waiting for the community and making the community also to understand the duty. Now, Chair, my question to the legal aid is that how are they advertising themselves, since that people, they must know their work. And maybe get someone who can make a testimony to say, I was telling a case, then legal aid have assisting me. Meanwhile, I was inside the fence. I'm talking about correctional, because we're talking about correctional things. I'm not talking about people outside. How many people they make a testimony of their work to show that they are doing what they're supposed to be done? To care, how are they advertising themselves to correctional centers? Chairperson, also I want to know the problem of them and the correctional state. How is their problem? How are they making their problem? I understand that they give you 5 things. Doing what? Out of that problem, what do they want to achieve in terms of the image inside in the center? Chairperson, it has been raised about 3 or 4 members the issue of the age, of which is the one that is the challenge. And the challenge of this age is overcrowding. Where we find a person that is having a baby that is not affording. And maybe the case is a minor case. It's something that the lawyer can assist that person to be out of the case because the case is minor. We want to get all those things from them. Also, the issue of the fine case. There are inmates inside in the center. You find that person has taken a fine. That is the reasonable. Where is he? On that day, this person is given a fine. That day, this person can be out and make our center not having a overcrowding. The issue of people who stay in a center 4 years or 6 years, where is the legal aid there? So we need to stay at the center for 4 years or 6 years. What are they saying about that? Chairperson, even the problem of the children that are in the waiting line, how are they assisting these children in terms of the awaiting flight? Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I will have follow-up questions if ever I didn't get the really answer that they were expecting in this community. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Martha Lippa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will go to page 47, the last point. The backlog cost project to reduce backlog situation. One would have liked to see a breakdown of those backlog costs. Here's an indication of what I was talking about. Although we are not a legal team or expert, we know how to do our own oversight. That's the reason we cry out all the time when we are
an overpriced in the center. I want to talk about practicality that we are facing when we go to this center. Somewhere in this presentation, there is also a mention of good relationship with stakeholders. Coming to it, visiting the center, we came across an inmate in Kronstadt who was mentally challenged. We picked him out while we were interviewing him because we could see something is not right. This has been something. My question is, if his bail was 100 rand, that is what shocked me. My first question was, did you have legal aid representatives? He couldn't answer, because he answered his own thing, of his own thing, while you are talking to him. Where was the legal aid representative in that court, where this person was? Because according to the presentation, you are in this court. So you should have picked that up when that person was in court. You couldn't have really communicated to us. And that's why we always ask when you are at the center. According to your good relationship with the stakeholders, VCF was supposed to invite you to that request. So that on the spot, we can address this minor issue. The second one that was also given me it was the one of Sotheby's, where there were four of, I can say, of the offenders that were incarcerated. The one that made headlines for a long time with the rich father who get a role inappropriately. And the others, because they didn't have money to respect them, they didn't have a legal representative. They had committed the very same murder crime. They had to stay inside. The rich one went out inappropriately. And that's what we get the sense. Are those the cases that you are picking up and addressing on the phone? Are you getting involved in those cases? Because to my knowledge, you are supposed to get involved in cases like that. That when people are helped and have got money, they can do what they like and buy what they like, even buy judicial. And others don't have money. So you are left for whatever reason to not to help, have help, someone to help you, to listen to your mind. That's the practicality that we're talking about. I really want to know, are you not invited when they are going to visit the center? Because I see that you feel offended that I have raised, that they've even put my name, I'm not a little bit of Africa representative, you put my name in a presentation because you feel offended of what we have asked. Yes. Now the place is only for nice introduction, I mean the introduction of the legal aid of Africa presentation.
The reason why this was a very sensitive issue for us as a committee is, among other things, the Zimbata situation, which was so good explained or substantiated by the regional manager in the area, and I'm very grateful to you for the answer and approach. You know, we found about 20, 30 children there, illiterate. They totally illiterate. We were told they were totally illiterate. And they were accused for various criminal offenses. Now, you know, in terms of the constitution, you know, you've got the right for fair trial. and they are totally in the hands of the legal practitioners. And some of them, the people don't even know where their parents are. So they were part of our problem. Not the whole problem, but part of the problem is to ensure that if they are represented, that they are properly done. So it is also, I think we've got consensus about maybe as a result of past experience that the perception is not good about legal aid, whether true or not. However, you indicated in your opening remarks that there's a total change of view and commitment and new structures and a new management culture, which is very pleasing. And I also think that the committee has noted your preparedness to make available the necessary personnel for company at an oversight. So a lot of my questions have been answered already. I just want to ask, the CEO mentioned about the internal structures are to monitor tenders and ensure tenders are being achieved and maintained. Is that, do you have, I didn't pick it up in your presentation, a record of your success rate, of different cases per person, your success rate, and if the success rate is not good, evaluation or performance, is it a lack of experience or is it your fact? And as you just indicated, you are not ready to put all that, no institution is 100% perfect. That's a must. You can't have 100% perfect. So yeah, there's always room for improvement. Then, the average case loan, I might miss it if it is here, per legal aid lawyer. And this paralegal, to what extent are they trained to adequately represent clients in court? And if they do it, and I think for now, I think I'm satisfied because all other stuff will be addressed by the other speakers. But what is pleasing, we are not, the committee is not a committee who debate the budget or to account for it. No. This committee is there to address the concerns with regard to our image. We are the monitoring body to ensure that DCS is looking after in terms of the constitution, and whether their right as enshrined in our constitution is being protected. So I am very impressed that with your input and your commitment. Thanks.
Meneer Abra?
Mijn dank, voorzitter. I also want to join in by thanking the judge and his team for the presentation today. And I agree that we're all human and we do make mistakes and something does go wrong. But that electronic thing in front of you can also go wrong and give you the wrong information. Chairperson, Mr. Max has spoken about the success rate. What I think is important here is to determine that in terms of the number of cases that you are called upon to take up, what have been your success rates in terms of, on the one hand, those that are discharged, cautioned or whatever, and those that are found guilty. Well, you know, you can have the best lawyer in the world. But if the sort of crime that you have committed is of such a nature, then no lawyer in the world can save you from it. So I accept that success rate is also a relative word, you know. And one needs to understand that a lawyer does his best for his client. But then there's something that concerns me and worries me, and that is that I get the sense that many people, including relatives and friends of people who have been arrested, because you only come in at the point where somebody has been arrested. You then are called upon to represent this person. Yeah. Now, what is the procedure that needs to be followed in order to get assistance from the legal aid board? I mean, when a layman asks me in the street, how do I do this?
even at the point where the person makes a first appearance, and that person then tells the presiding officer that I require legal assistance. Is it at that point that the person gets the assistance? Or is it at the point of arrest and the arresting, well, not the arresting agency, which would be the police or the officer or whatever, depending on the severity of the crime? But the DGS then advised in that lesson, you have these following rights. In the course of your interaction with these clients, what level of... I'm very concerned about the welfare of those human beings. They may have wrong society, but they also have rights. And I heard the word adequate in the Constitution talks about. I don't know how can you quantify adequate. But adequate means that if you have an hour-long session with a person, it's adequate. So it's also a great area, but if you could perhaps tell us what you consider to be adequate. But then, Chairperson, when you are presenting this particular individual that you have been called upon to assist, what level or what percentage of them complain about ill treatment, about facilities not up to standard, about issues like, food being kept away from you, certain services that a human being is entitled to are not being allowed to you. Now, once it is not your function to investigate those matters, I'm asking you this because there is this confidentiality between attorney and client or a legal representative and client. And what I'm not asking about specific cases, but the percentages, because we constantly hear about the fact that certain awaiting trialists are sort of further persecuted as a result of perhaps their attitude or whatever. I mean, there are always two sides to a story, and I believe there are three. It's your side, my side, and in the middle, the judges must find the truth. So if you could perhaps give us a sense of that. Finally, Chairperson, regarding the issue that there was responded to, not responded to in the course of the presentation, we were told that no legal representative would encourage anybody to enter into a guilty plea or a plea bargain, I don't know if that's part of it, without a supervisor having gone through the whole thing and having advice what route should be followed for that particular client. If you could just, just clarify what exactly you perceive to be your duty in order to see that the client rights are not compromised. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time and caught up with that. We'll answer the question, but let's put it to general issues and we'll allow you to close them up. Clearly, judge whether real or perceived. You get the sense that this committee is concerned. This committee is concerned, and maybe our regulated action will spell some of these things. But many members are raising the world order. You said, man, that you have a practitioner going to tell them twice a week or 2 days a week, type of thing, I think that's et cetera. Paralegal 4 days a week, type of thing. And I'm going to the case of, it says, on every 6,000 people awaiting trial, 4 days a week, one person. I know you spoke about caseload thing, but let us put it to you that we are concerned about caseload. You're going to have to convince us otherwise. We are just concerned that your practitioners are able to deal with all the caseload before this. Now, if it means that you must have a further meeting on caseload, we'll have to have that meeting. Concerned about it. Because the footprint that you talk about here, for instance, when Abraham raised the point of verbal, would you have a legal practitioner in verbal or are they centered just in the more urban areas kind of thing? Because that's part of it. We know we take for granted that if you deal with somebody in Dope, you bring your dog. But somebody sitting in Harangua, maybe never dealt with. So we are very concerned about case, about the footprint, and I'm saying we will need a more detailed discussion. And the last general point that we're making, Judge, that we have to discuss later on, around the quality that we raised earlier.
is if you have a paralegal and then it's the last page definitely. Paralegal, I mean how sensible is it? That your practitioners are maybe not the most experienced, but we don't expect them to be the most experienced people around. But we get a sense sometimes that these are fresh from school, that type of thing. And the concern that we have is that because of the financial situation that most of the people that require legal aid are in, we would need a practitioner that is able to deliver that service. I think the point that Mr. Chow has made. You know, we get the sense, and we say whether it's real or not, we must debate. How dare they think that legal aid practitioners are students, or especially from school. And so these are all perceptions that we pick up, and we need to deal with them. So over and above the general one, the footprints, the quality of legal aid, and it's a workload that you talk to as a wrap up, and we certainly would invite you to our follow-up. I mean, to our other meetings where we'll get into more detail. Let me remind you what members have said so that you can do. Then it's success rate or made by more than one member. What's the success rate? It's the awareness campaign. It's the, what is the objectives of your business or your program? What is it that you're really hoping to achieve? And then I think the bail review we've spoken about. But it's again there, the bail review and the whole thing of fine. When somebody gets fined, I understand why you're not arguing their case. The waiting trial or remand detention, both the length and those that are children, the backlog breakdown, current not mentally ill that it's been fined for 100 grand, the question is if you were there, surely you could have argued otherwise. Then the Ronan Water, I think my Alisa was talking about Water Flow 4. The Water Flow 4, if you get involved in any waiting that one. And then the fact that we have seen little children that are incarcerated, how fair was their child, or did they get legal representations of them, that's an attack specifically. And then the paralegal training average workload, and of course when they are up point, the more serious one is, do you guys really think that you are giving adequate time to people so that they are in a position to repair child? Or just seeing them in court, do you regard that as adequate? You can answer the question structure posing judge, and certainly we will then invite you to follow the meeting. And we are out of here probably 10 minutes or so, if you can, because somebody's going to come and pull you up in a minute. Thank you, Chair. Could I ask my people just to respond to the multiple issues and deal with the helicopter issues? Thank you, Chair.
I will stop the school coverage. I think there is a general misconception and a misunderstanding between the paralegal and how we cover our court. It is not mentioned in our annual report. However, paralegals do have a paralegal qualification that is for enhanced legal training. They interview clients and they give advice. They do not appear in court. They do not have a right of appearance in court. Our district courts are manned by candidate attorneys. However, these candidate attorneys go through a comprehensive court readiness program before they are allowed to appear in court. These are also the people that work under strict supervision and not allowed to offer a guilty plea without the supervisor signing off on it. We also have district court attorneys, which are qualified attorneys that they cover the district court, which is our less serious case. In the regional courts, we only appoint attorneys the 5 years as more expert acquisition experience. But each attorney that is in the district, in the regional court, in a more serious crime happens, have 5 years at least legal experience in court. Our high court practitioners have 7 years experience, at minimum. So I think it's just to dispel that factor. Paralegal are there as a point of advice to take the background of. So in terms of the court coverage, it is also set up in the annual report.
Okay, thank you. I think a lot of them, if we don't have a look, I think we've got to understand there's a balancing act in terms of a lot of the things that we could do and would like to do, but there's a significant increase in budget required. I think if you look at our full coverage, we would like 2 petitions per regional court. At the moment, we're below 1.2, so that means we're only able to have a petitioner that take one day off in the week. In the district court, we can only cover the court. If it sits 5 days a week, we can only cover it 4 days in the week. The fifth day, we can't cover it, because that's the issue of capacity and what budget has in terms of it. And I think if you go and have a look at our various submissions that we've made over a period of time,
has been, let's increase those ratios. But unfortunately, the funding to come to increase those ratios have not been forthcoming. So I think we've got to understand there's a balancing act between the budget that is available and the coverage we can do in terms of the courts and the target in terms of the practitioners and how often. The best would be if you have two practitioners in a regional court. One, they can do one trial and the other one can prepare while that trial is still busy and you have the rolling roll. So, but it's all linked to budget. So a lot of the things that we can say, we'll come back to and say, that's fine, but we agree. But where's the budget going to come from? And I think that's the understanding that we have to have. Maybe the engagements will assist us to be able to have that understanding of what our budget issues, what the constraints are, what we would need if we had to do a few of those. I think in terms of how do we market ourselves, we have a program, if you have a look at it, and we have copies of our annual report available. You will see there's a very specific program in terms of self-branding. So to make ourselves, we will brand ourselves, specifically holding cells at police stations, at prisons, we seek permission, we go out and we've got a standard form of business, we brand it so that people can see where they can contact us, specifically with the contact numbers. If you'll see our advertising campaign, a lot of it is on television. We have a call center that came starting in June of 2010. 10% of the calls there are coming from prisons in custody. So if we can deal with them and link them. So I think also in terms of that, so we have our national single number that can get advertised where they can link to as well. In terms of when do we link to them, I think what I understand is once arrested, they've got to appear within 48 hours. Part of the IJS we are looking at, and there's a pilot project, how we link to the police in terms of when they register a case for someone to go to court, that it will, via the computer system, send us a message to say this is someone that requires assistance. But I think there's still a way to go in the overall integration of systems between various departments that that's going to be able to function effectively, because that will then be the earliest possible notice. Other than that, we would, depending on where you are, some of these channelization courts where we have two practitioners at specific dedicated courts where the case, new cases and fresh cases come in. So we have two practitioners there so that we can assist with the processing, seeing that someone can deal with the bail issues at the time, different ones, so that you don't sit with only one practitioner having to deal with it. Because dealing with 40 new cases coming in on day can be heavy. So where those are, we can put in additional capacity. Other than that, they would then link to our practitioners in the court. They can apply to court. The practitioner will assist them to complete the application. So that's in terms of linking, but most of the linkages at this stage would happen at the court, but the practitioners have the necessary forms to assist them to apply. If not, there would be someone there that would assist in terms of the application. Just explain right to legal aid, why is the presiding officer? And it's a requirement in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act that the presiding officers explain their rights and also ensure that they get access to those rights. So if the practitioners are not there, they're able to ensure that that happens. If our practitioners must be, how do they ensure the linkage is there? There are some stages where presiding officer will postpone the case to a day where our practitioners are not in court. Those are the kinds of relationship issues sometimes we've got to pick up. So there are some gaps, and that's, I think we've said, not all perfect, and the CEO always answers what's new, what's different, how do we improve, and we as an organisation are prepared to, if there's an issue, to have a look at an investigation, how do we deal with it and how do we address the gap? But obviously, on the other hand, also there are some relevant implications. In terms of outcomes, I think where you want to know, we've got to understand in terms of, it's wonderful to look at the prosecution success rate, because they exclude all the withdrawal cases and the cases that don't happen. For us, it's not about how successful it were, did I get someone, are they found not guilty? It's about a fair trial. Are you entitled to a fair trial? If you've had a fair trial, I've done everything I can do properly for you, and you're convicted by a competent court that says, on the evidence, I find you guilty, we as practitioners have to be satisfied with that as a process. So you can't go and judge practitioners and say, well, your success rate is zero, when the prosecution have a control as to who they charge, whether they have sufficient evidence or they don't have sufficient evidence. We have no control of that process in practitioners. Obviously, this is a guideline we can look at, but you can't judge the practitioners to say, well, on your success rate. But let's go and have a look in the annual report. You'll see in the first term of 2012, our practitioners in the Supreme Court of Appeal had 100% success rate. If you looked over the last financial year in the Supreme Court of Appeal, our success rate on appeals was over 67%. The average was below 50%, which means your private practitioner success rate must have been in the 40%. In the same court.
So if you can do it, but that doesn't mean one way or the other that clients are poor representation if they are unsuccessful. It means that a competent court is found guilty. I think that's what we've got to understand. And if we can't then say, well, if we understand they're satisfied with it, we can appeal it. In regard to bail, we don't set bail. We can argue as much as we possible, the presiding officer maintains the discretion. If we're not happy with the bail, the only option that we have is to bring a bail appeal. And we've done that. We're specifically this two-stage bail approach, specifically where poor persons are not able to afford the costs. We've taken magistrates on appeal. We said you've got to apply a two-stage approach. We've got the judgment in terms of where we've done it. So when we find there's an issue and a broader issue, we're quite prepared to take it on. You mentioned a child, and I mentioned a case that we took on in the Free State. Theft of 250 rand, but fined 100 rand. Couldn't pay the fine. Parents was there. The presiding officer wasn't the day for our petitioner to be in the court. The presiding officer didn't ensure that there was representation. Feeling guilty, sentenced the child to 100 rand. Couldn't pay the fine a month later back in prison, and then get raped in the police office. And we took that on appeal to go and say, this child never got the benefit of the rights in terms of the Child Justice Act and should have been diverted out of the system and should never have stood trial. Unfortunately, the conviction stood, but the sentence was set aside. And that's the only thing that you can do, is then go and set the sentence aside. But unfortunately for that child, the consequences had already happened. So I think we've also got to understand, we don't have control of what the presiding officer decides. We can deal with them on appeal. Where that comes to our attention, from what happened, we will do that, and we have. I mean, in terms of children, I think in terms of those, that they shouldn't be in prison in Dhaka, and let's understand if they are there, why they are there. There's only very limited circumstances that they may be there. We monitor that in terms of DCS from a national level. We also have the criminal justice system review, where the statistics coming in terms of those that are in trial longer than 2 years, we take this. We have a national system to monitor and understand why those trials have taken 2 years. I think if we had to take you through them, you'll understand the multifarious reasons why in some cases are taking longer. I mean, in some instances, you look at it, there's 200 postponements. 60 of them were because the accused was unrepresented but wanted the glasses. And therefore, you've got to understand there was some problem in terms of that. So it's very easy to say why case is taking so long, but I continue now, if you'll have a look across the board, there's multifarious reasons why that happens. And I think we're going to have an engagement and have a look to understand it.
Chair, can I hear all of them? Yeah, if you don't mind. We on a time. Thanks. I think the first thing I need to assure the committee on is we haven't come back to defend ourselves. We've come here and tell us what we do. And that's not in response to what you've raised with us. And I hope if there is a reciprocal approach, you don't fight with us. You tell us what the problems are. Right. So I think it's a constructive engagement. Let's put it that way. So I'm not here to defend myself. I'm here to tell you what we do and to address the gaps that you show are there. I give you that assurance. And Chair, I have a feeling that there are a number of issues that have not been properly covered. And I will go back with my team. We will look at those issues. We'll give you a report and can we ask to come back and debate those issues further? I undertake to do that. And if Honourable Member Paliso feels offended, she is her name in our report, we're simply illustrating the point that that's what she said about us. And we can respond to those things. So let's defend ourselves. My staff can tell you, I get complaints daily. And when they get a complaint from me, they know that someone's had it before. Because I take these issues in and then I said it my name. So I give that assurance. We will deal with whatever problems are there. The issue of success rate, I mean, there's a lot that can be said about that. We had the minimum sentence decision come here. Because we had an executive government that says there's a high class rate in this country. And that ushers in a conviction-driven approach in the country. The population of people serving life sentences grew tenfold in no time. So what we say in Chair, we check these things, we look at them, and we try to come in and help where we can. The mentally retarded person in Costa prison, I think I'd like to get more details about that. Because those are not the cases we want to hear about. So I think we'll get more details. The person who was on a 100-rand bail couldn't afford it, the son of other people. The other issue, members, is
We don't impose ourselves on people. We have a regression call. And when they ask the magistrate asks them, do you have money? Do you have a lot? Because if you don't, there's the money. And my people are there. And I can assure you, it still happens. People say, no, we find our own money. It's only in the late stage that people say, no, we don't have money. We'll go to the money. But those postponements with the first legal aid when we were not involved. So there are these cases that go to the court. Don't blame. Lastly, Chair, people in the committee mentioned that, demand, I think, mentioned the fact that we seem to be saying you take things from the air. We never said this. We recognize that what you say to us, what you hear from prisoners. But what we say, we just caution, don't take it as fact. I've practiced law, Mr. Max has practiced law. He knows that a person who's been represented may have had content at sea as his advocate, but if he went down, content at sea is the worst not ever. Admit and agree that that's reality out. So we say, they tell you things, don't convict us on that basis. Yeah. And then somewhere along the line, we'll find that, but we'll find truth. Thank you, Chair.
Alright, you are no longer convicted of that, but we will call you back. There are serious matters that I'll ask members to be more specific on. And next time we see you, we'll see you on specific matters. Please come and respond to this matter. Come and respond, because I do think that there are many perceptions out there, but we need to get to the facts. We'll do that. You certainly will get another invite. You also get an invite when we see the effective judge, because there seems to be a lot of crossovers. That matters that go to him, we, together with Cindy, we'll direct some of them to you, because we think some of them we need to know about. Although the second judge is the person that we deal with first. So thank you very much to you and your team. I'll come to you then. Thank you very much to you and your team. We certainly will re-invite you. Mampadis is going to be the absolute last person to speak, because otherwise we're going to be hindering other people.
Unfortunately, Captain Sammy didn't get the answer to what at the closer one, the member Captain Sammy, he thought it why we went there. We thought it ourselves, it's our same liquor from this.
Alright, we shall adjourn until the next time we meet, and we'll carry on with these other matters. Thank you very much.
Okay.